I will be the first to admit that I have sometimes crossed the line with this newsletter. I think that kind of put us on the map.
You broke 1,000 about a year ago, July 2025. You broke 5K. And then a couple weeks ago, you finally broke 10K.
People want to read local journalism because they care about the things that happen around them. If you do that and if you deliver consistently, you will build an audience.
For any listeners who might not have such training, what can you teach our listeners?
How do you find scoops and how do you find stories is the question that all of us are trying like perpetually to answer.
Yeah, well, you're doing it. Welcome back to the Creator Spotlight Podcast. My name is Francis Zier, and today we are speaking with Tomo Chen. Tomo is the creator of Morning Trojan, a newsletter serving the University of Southern California. His newsletter has grown to over 10,000 subscribers over the last few years of working on it, and most of that growth came after one change he made about a year ago. We'll get into that on the pod. So this is a conversation in the same vein as previous episodes on both local media entrepreneurs and creator model journalism. If you've liked those, you will certainly like this one. Enjoy. Tell me about the relationship between Morning Trojan and the other on-campus publications. How many other publications are there and what's the history?
Yeah. I mean, we definitely have a bit of a friendly competition going on. And that's what's one of the things that's so great about the kind of student media scene at USC, which is we have, I mean, essentially three publications. I mean, there's one, which is the Daily Trojan, which is kind of the legacy student news outlet, if you will. It's been around since like 1912 or 1915 or something like that. There's a newer one called Annenberg Media. And so that's more affiliated with the School of Journalism. And so kind of the way that works is, you know, if you write stories for classes, you go and you publish it there. You know, like if you're in the journalism program, you're kind of forced to go work a shift there. And then there's us. And so there's a healthy ecosystem going. And then obviously the LA Times and all the other kind of LA news outlets will occasionally come and cover stuff about USC, given that it is such a kind of large part of Los Angeles. But, you know, day-to-day student media competition, there are three of us, and there is certainly some friendly competition to see who reaches the scoops first.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you're kind of disrupting a little bit, right? When we first spoke, you told me that you had worked for at least one of these and that, you know, you kind of realized, oh, the people weren't really reading them at the rates you might expect or desire. And so when you made Morning Trojan, it was partially at least to kind of solve that distribution problem.
Right. You know, in some ways we have almost different audiences in that. Mm. The other student media outlets, I mean, I'm not like too familiar with their traffic and their numbers, but you know, at least when I was there, I mean, a lot of the traffic was coming from social and it was, you know, basically like you have a large audience on Instagram. Like I think the Daily Trojan has like 30,000 followers and the one has like 20. And so that, you know, that's a good number and they'll get a lot of impressions on these posts. And that's where most college students are by and large. So, you know, mm-hmm. that's great. You know, for us, you know, we're not on social media, and the reason why we did it as a newsletter was originally, I mean, the whole idea was to kind of get people off social media, but to give them a news product that was still going to be digestible and you know, actually like pleasant to read. And so we kind of in some ways almost control the distribution of the web content about USC. You know, we have at this point, something like 11,000 subscribers, which is a substantial chunk of like the people at USC who are going to be interested in reading the news on a daily basis. So
I think you told me that it's around 75,000 people total, right? At the school and people who work
right,
there.
There are, yeah, 70,000, you know, undergrads, grads, professors and like staff. And then, you know, I mean, obviously that number could get expanded to, you could call it 100,000 or 150 or 200,000 if you want to count parents and alumni or whatever, but that's kind of the, you know, when I think about the core audience that we're going after, you know, it's like these 70,000 people who are at USC every day, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, to some degree, you know, especially because this newsletter is really just me writing it, you know, my feeling is like, if I get beaten on a story, it's like, okay, fine. Like, that's great for our competitors and people can come to our newsletter and they can like, that's where they're going to learn about it. I almost liken it to a, like when you walk into a Costco and you're choosing between like two brands of pretzels and there's like the Kirkland signature brand and then there's like the name brand and like Costco isn't really care which one you get. Like maybe they make more money if you get the Kirkland Signature one, but like you're there and you're in the Costco, right? That's kind of the value. That's the beauty of these, like the aggregation and the curation.
Mm-hmm. So all these other publications you listed are funded by the school, right? And you are not. I think you pay for this out of pocket. There's some sponsorship revenue, but this isn't really a, you know, money printing machine for you. But that
not at all.
Probably allows you to do things and cover stories, right? You know, the tone of subject lines, all these little details, right? This probably allows you to do things that these other publications couldn't.
Yeah, and I think that's true, but I mean, I think it's worth prefacing that with the fact that I've worked at, you know, these other student media publications.
Not to trash
and there's
them.
A never, yeah, well, yeah, I mean, like, and there was never a sense on my part that the school or the faculty wouldn't let us write, you know, any particular thing. I mean, like, granted, I'm sure there are things I've done in my newsletter that would not have flown. I mean, for many reasons at these other publications. But yes, I mean, like, we, during the pro-Palestinian encampments, you know, a few semesters ago, I felt like USC, like many other higher education institutions, there's a lot of animosity between the kind of students and the faculty and the school's administration. And, you know, people were penning, you know, thoughtful op-eds about this in the Daily Trojan and the LA Times. And what we did was we held a Moron of the Year competition in which we let our readers vote on the Moron of the Year. And then I FedExed a Moron of the Year trophy to the university president. Which, you know, was like, am I gonna
Annenberg Media might not have let you do that.
Right? Yeah, and like, I mean, you know, that's one of those things where, like I will be the first to admit that I have sometimes kind of crossed the line with this newsletter. Like, you know, like, am I gonna look back on the Moron of the Year trophy in 10 years and be like, well, that's kind of an asshole? Like, probably, but I do feel like we have latitude to do things like that where, you know, I think it's easy to write off something like that as kind of, you know, like crass or, mm-hmm. you know, just a college kid who's just like looking for attention or whatever, which, like, you know, might be true. But, I felt like FedExing a Moron of the Year trophy to the university president, like, really captured how people were feeling. Like, they were not feeling like reading thoughtful op-eds about these things, like they were yeah. pissed, and like they voted. I mean, I didn't choose her. Like it was the readers that chose her, right? And you know, we are able to do things like that, and we're able to have some fun with the content. And I think that is kind of a sort of integral part of the brand at this point. Although, you know, we've started to kind of scale that back a little bit and become a little more straight-laced just as the audience grows larger and we do more and more original content. Like, I think there's a feeling of, okay, like, we do need people to take us seriously because, like, we do need to write. Yeah, exactly. Like,
okay. Well, how many people, if you're willing to share, you don't have to, if you don't want to, how many people voted, for example, in that Moron of the Year situation?
We were pretty small back then. It must have been, it's like 400 or 500. I actually turned it into like a marketing thing. It was like, if you wanted to vote,
you have to send it.
You had to subscribe. Like, or like if you when you filled out like the Google form, it made you give me your email address, and then I signed up your email address. So, you know, it was a audience. yeah, it was a marketing thing as much as it was as a editorial or whatever kind of thing. But yeah, I mean, that was back when the audience was still relatively small.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you did tell me that it really started growing once you started doing scoops, doing more original reporting, not just the aggregation product, but there's kind of these two distinct products. There's the week daily, I believe, email, which I'll describe the format because it's very simple and very clean. It's very completable, right? The intro says, good morning, it's day of the week, and these are the five USC, Los Angeles, and California stories that you need to know for today. And then there's five stories, typically one from you, that's on the Morning Trojan website, and then various others from on-campus publications and LA and California publications. And each one just gets about 50 words of description, and that's it. And for, I think, the first couple of years, it was really just that, and you weren't really doing the original reporting of the scoops, because you told me that when you started doing that, it was when you grew, right? So 2 years of aggregation, and then about a year ago, you started doing more original reporting.
Yeah, that's right. And I mean, as anybody who runs a newsletter knows. I mean, like, it's very hard to get organic growth, kind of on newsletter platforms. And I mean, yeah, a problem that we had when we were doing the aggregation was at the time, I mean, like, really our only value add was, okay, one, like, the curation, but also, you know, okay, like, we'd put in a little snark and maybe the framing was kind of funny. Like, you know, there was an audience of people who liked it, but the problem is, like, it's very hard to build a large audience based off that, especially when your target, you know, your market is really only 70,000 people, which is not huge, right?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, we kind of plateaued at the kind of right around the 1,000 mark, which is like, okay, like, you know, it's a fun project at that point, but, you know, like, does it really matter? And then, yeah, I mean, about a year ago, I think we realized, okay, there is a need for this kind of day-to-day insider reporting about this university, which is basically like a small city, right? Mm-hmm. and there's this need for this kind of in-depth daily coverage about the university that the LA Times doesn't necessarily do, just because they write for a general audience, right? And so we have been able to kind of fill that niche, and you know we've been rewarded in terms of the subscriber count.
Yeah, so you've shared publicly the numbers, the subscriber numbers. So I was looking at the graph and I could tell that, yeah, you broke 1,000 about a year ago, as you said. And then by this July, July 2025, you broke 5K. And then a couple of weeks ago, as we record at the end of October, you finally broke 10K. So the growth I guess it's sped up a little bit, but more so been fairly steady and just on a much increased curve since you started doing that. Have there been any particular stories that like drove the most, or has it really just been like, oh, you shared this one, people signed up for that, and oh, maybe now they're sharing, forwarding the email to friends, and now people are having to click, you know, to sign up once they click to the web version and it's subscriber gated, whatever. I guess question is, have there been any particular stories that really drove it, or is it just steady?
I mean, the biggest thing for us at USC right now is we're going through a pretty sizable round of layoffs. It's been almost 1,000 at this point. And, you know, this is because the university has racked up a pretty sizable operating deficit over the last, you know, 5 or 6 years. So when we started breaking news about that, that sort of instantly expanded our potential audience, and that a lot of our readership before that was, you know, it was largely students largely undergraduates. But once we started the coverage of the layoffs, I mean, like, obviously that is something that will like very quickly go viral among you know the people who are potentially subject to these layoffs. And I think once we started doing that, I think that kind of put us on the map for that, you know, like 20,000-30,000, you know, large group of people who are the people who work at the university. So I think for us, that has been one of the kind of single biggest areas of coverage that have expanded the subscriber count. But, you know, as I think I had mentioned before, like, the news about the fires and the hit and run car crashes and the, you know, kind of like the daily local news reporting, the kind of like traditional crime reporting, I mean, that gets at this point as many subscriptions as, you know, the scoops that we get with insider sources and, you know, the business offices of USC. And in some ways it's cool to see that like people want to read local journalism because they care about the things that happen around them. And if you do that, and if you deliver consistently, you will build an audience.
If you have a website, you know how hard it can be to keep ads relevant to every visitor. That's where Google AdSense comes in. It connects your site to one of the largest ad networks in the world, so advertisers actually compete to reach your audience. Even if your content serves a specific niche, AdSense ensures your visitors see ads that matter to them, wherever they are. Publishers like WikiHow trust AdSense because the ads are high quality, the setup is simple, and the revenue is consistent. Visit google.com/earnwithadsense to learn more. That's google.com/earnwithadsense. So you are studying journalism. You are also a professional journalist outside of Morning Trojan. You work for the San Francisco Standard. For any listeners who might not have such training, but, you know, aspire to maybe whether they're a writer or a video creator, whatever kind of creator they are, and they aspire to have better journalistic practices in their work, right? How does one go about getting scoops, finding sources, like, you know, finding and then packaging these this information for their audience, right? Like just some basic journalism principles. What can you teach our listeners?
Well, that's kind of the big question. I mean, the how do you find scoops and how do you find stories is the question that all of us are trying like perpetually to answer.
Yeah, well, you're doing it.
I mean, in terms of getting scoops and owning a beat, I mean, I think the biggest thing for us has just been being consistent. And the kind of the beauty of our product is that, you know, as mentioned before, we have these kind of two distinct products, right? One is the daily email aggregation, and the other is these original stories that live on our website. And, you know, essentially these original stories bring in probably 90-95% of the subscribers, but then the daily aggregation is what keeps them around and keeps them engaged. It's great in terms of building an audience, but also we have sources who you know read the newsletter every morning, and then they're more likely to reach out and give us tips, right? And it's because we are consistent, and we have established ourselves as this home for, you know, this kind of scoopy insider reporting about the university. We've spent at this point 3 years building this brand. So I think on my end, I mean, a lot of this has been about just consistency. You know, in terms of journalism training, I mean, that's a more difficult question to answer. I mean, like,
well, I'll butt in for a second. There. I mean, I would agree with you, like, on just based in like with my work with Critter Spotlight, right? When I started, you know, we had quite a few subscribers because I took it over from Beehive, right? But by, you know, a few months in, definitely a year in, certainly now, people are now pitching me guests all the time, right? And there's like people who might send me feedback and say, oh, I wish you would write about this kind of thing, or I wish you would interview some kind of creator from this kind of niche, right? And which is just, I mean, proving out what you're saying. If you do the thing consistently and like deliver on, you know, your premise over time, then people will accrue in the audience who then give you that. It's really quite simple, I guess.
Yeah. Well, you know, so, you know, it sounds quite simple. And, you know, when you reflect back on the work you've done, it sounds simple, but certainly, you know, when you're in the middle, and, I'm certainly still in the middle of it. I mean, it's a lot of work. And, you know, you wake up in the morning and you've got this damn newsletter that you've committed to writing 5 days a week, and you wake up and maybe you went out the night before and like, maybe you didn't prep the newsletter, and you're up and it's 6:30 and you've got like 90 minutes to go and push out this email newsletter. And like, I don't know, like candidly, like maybe you're a little hungover, and it's like, dang, like this kind of sucks.
Well, okay. But I mean, the format is so simple, right? The format is so, so simple. Like the entire newsletter is, I don't know, 250 to 300 words. Yep. Has it ever really changed, or did you just kind of set it and just repeat
it's
it?
The fundamental structure of the newsletter has always been the same. It's always been a small number of these kind of short summaries for you to read. And the goal has always been to keep the summaries of these stories at a length where, okay, you could read the summary in the newsletter, and like you can understand what the story is from that. But if you want to read more, you can click into the story. And it's meant to kind of walk that kind of thin line. I think sometimes newsletters lean too heavily into the, like, we're going to make this, like, we want you to stick around in the newsletter. And so here's like 1200 words. And like, I don't want to read 1200 words in your newsletter in the morning. Like I want to be able to pick and choose what I read. And so, you know, this product is informed by my own sensibilities as a news consumer. But I mean, to answer your original question, I mean, yes, like the product has changed in terms of the length. I mean, there's a period of time where it was probably, I don't know, the word count was probably 25% like higher than what it was now. And, you know, it got to a point where it was getting a little bit long. I was like, okay, I think we could scale this back. And also, like, I honestly just don't want to write as much. But I mean, of course, like it's actually harder in many ways to write less, cause it like requires you to like synthesize these ideas more and like kind of engage more critically with like the information you're writing about. And so, you know, that can be difficult. But no, you know, in the last 12 months, it really settled on a kind of format. And I think, the beauty of doing this for many years in a row is that, you kind of get used to doing it and you can kind of start writing it faster. And, you know, I used to like stare at the computer screen and like bang my head on the keyboard because I couldn't figure out what to write. And now, you know, I do it in bed and I crank it out. I'm like, usually it's fine. And
yeah. You know, like you said in another interview that you would typically spend 90 minutes prepping the newsletter the night before and then maybe an hour in the morning. So about 2.5 hours per issue. Regardless of like the exact amount of time you're spending on it, there's 5 stories, right? So how many stories are you typically filtering through to make it 5?
Gosh, I mean, I guess it depends what you mean by filtering through. I mean, I'm probably skimming 50, 60, 70 headlines when looking for stories on a given newsletter. But it also can depend, you know, if there are 4 really big stories about USC, like my work.
Some days you already know exactly what you're
doing. Right. Yeah. And like, you know, I've like already seen it or whatever, but then, you know, some days there's like literally no story about USC that's like worth reading. And I'm like, crap, like what am I going to put in this newsletter today? And then suddenly you're hunting through, I mean, not only news headlines, but you're like trying to find like a fun photo album to link to, like from Instagram accounts, or like you're surfing Reddit and like trying, like dear God, to find something that like you could link to.
So you're saying some days it's like 5 hours of searching.
Oh yeah, like it can really depend. But no, I mean, I do probably a half hour, 45 minutes of prep the night before, and then I wake up at like 6:30, 6:45, then I bang out the thing, and I have a proofreader named Anna. And you know, I'm supposed to send her the newsletter by 7:30, so she has a half hour to proofread it. Usually it's more like 7:45 to 7:50 is when the newsletter is done and goes to her. But yeah, you know, we have a system and we worked it out, and you know, it only gets more and more efficient as we
she still proofreads every issue.
That's right.
Oh wow. Okay. Nice. Yeah. You sometimes have other people stand in for you, right? I think you've mentioned that you have like 2 people who will sometimes maybe they're writing articles or they're writing the newsletter.
Right. Right. So last year when I was driving between San Francisco and Los Angeles every week to, you know, work up there for the San Francisco Standard and attend school, I had. A guy named Matthew who would write the newsletter, and you know, like throughout the last 3 years, we've had you know, a number of people who have maybe kind of been on co-bylines, either for the daily aggregation or maybe you know, kind of a one-off story that we publish in our website. And you know, there's been like you know, I'd say like every once in a while somebody will contribute. But I mean, right now the core team has really always been me and Anna.
One, I think, problem with a newsletter serving college students, I don't know if this is the case at USC, but for me, in my college, you know, I get my .edu email address, and then I think it was about a year after we graduate, they delete it. You know, you no longer have access to it. And I've talked to, I think it was when I had Casey Lewis on almost 2 years ago, and she had done I forget the name of it, but she had done a product that was serving college-age women, and they experienced this problem where, you know, there was just this leak in their acquisition in their audience where every year around, you know, May, June, a large portion of their audience would get deleted. Is that something that you deal with?
So, you know, I don't have great numbers about it. I just have, you know, I've looked into it some, but I don't have a like firm statistic, but from what I've kind of observed myself, is it actually not a huge problem for us? I think part of that is we've only recently gotten kind of very large. So I don't have, you know, like many summers of seniors graduating and their email addresses to kind of like go off of. But I mean, anecdotally, a good number of seniors will tend to subscribe with their personal email addresses. You know, always at the end of the semester we send out a kind of end of semester email and say, hey, you know, if you want to unsubscribe, you know, no hard feelings, you know, you can do it at the bottom of this email. But if you want to like come and give us your personal email, you know, you're welcome to do that. You know, part of it for us now was that actually a large portion of our audience, probably 50%, maybe even 60, 70 is employees, right? And so these are people.
That's a large percentage.
You know, in theory. Yeah. And so these are people who are in theory sticking around here more. So I think we are in some ways kind of protected from that, you know, once yearly churn of students. But I mean, long way of saying on my end, I haven't noticed a significant drop off in subscribers or, you know, tons of emails suddenly, you know, bouncing, come May or June. Yeah.
Good. Okay. So when you were a junior in high school, you started the Mid Peninsula Post, another independent news outlet, kind of like Morning Trojan, a little different, that I believe by the time you stopped working on it, it still exists. We'll get into that. It had 3,000 monthly readers is what you wrote on your LinkedIn, at least. Why did you start that? Couldn't you just join a high school newspaper? Did you have to start something?
Well, so I was on the high school newspaper, and that's where I, you know, first kind of got excited about journalism. You know, there was a moment where we realized, the context of this was that I was a high schooler who was taking all this too seriously. So, you know, like,
well, obviously,
let's just put that out there.
But that's why it's interesting.
You know, sitting there, right. Okay. So, you know, we are on the high school newspaper. They're like, you know, 40 people, mostly poor, there to, you know, have fun or make friends or whatever. And then I was okay. Like, there are like maybe two of us who are like writing, all the stories here. And, so the idea was, okay, how about we get the kind of like, most engaged students at all the local high schools together in one place and run this news outlet. And the idea is that we will offer this like real in some ways maybe more serious coverage of the local school boards and you know, sometimes the local city councils. But we're going to do it in a way that targets high schoolers, and we're going to be kind of or at least try to be kind of digitally savvy and native to social media. And so that was the idea behind that. It was, you know, there was kind of this like, you know, as I said before, kind of altruistic, like, you know, we want young Americans to read the news, which, you know, I think is a noble goal. I think it's not one that necessarily drives me now, but that was the thinking at the time. And it was a fun project, and we learned a lot, and, you know, yeah.
Well, it's still going, right? Which is really interesting to me, especially because it's not tied to any one school. And so clearly that introduces some problems of like, oh, it's not like maybe, you know, the journalism teacher at this one school, it like falls to them to run this. I don't know. You tell me. But it's still going, which is the main thing that is really interesting to me. So how did this thing that you started how did you hand it off? And like, how are you involved at all still?
I am actually not involved. I at this point, I don't think I know any of the people who are there. Cause I mean, like my brother was a freshman when I was a senior in high school, and now he's in college. So I don't know anybody in the, like, who's in that like 4 years of high school. I've never, you know, overlapped with them.
Yeah.
You know, like I think like last year,
which is awesome.
There are a few of them who are on the thing. Yeah. No, it's just great. And, you know, I mean, like last year, like I think there were some of them on the staff who like I had run like track and cross country with back in high school. So I kind of knew them, and, you know, maybe we talk about it, but no, now I don't know them. But you know, the other, they're still going, they're keeping it up. When I had co-founded the thing with the guy Gil that you had mentioned, and Gil's great. Gil was he's a junior at U Chicago now, and Gil works. I mean, this is a tangent, but he works. He worked for Sam Liccardo, who was the former mayor of San Jose, who won a congressional seat in the Bay Area, and he was one of his campaign staffers. And, you know, Gil's like really great, and it's Gil's a year younger than me. So when I graduated, it was like kind of the obvious thing to do was to pass this off to him. And yeah, they're still going, but you know, my feeling with this Morning Trojan project is that I will be shutting it down when I graduate school.
That was my next question. Yeah. You're not like, is that something that you have wanted to do and you just decided like, it's not going to happen? Or you've just decided like, nope, that was it. Had fun.
You know, I think for a while I did want that to happen when I was looking for somebody to pass it off to, because of course, you know, when you do these projects, you want to build something that lasts and, you know, has longevity. You know, it became clear that it was going to be hard to set something up that was going to be able to kind of keep operating the way that I wanted to. And you know, when it's just you churning out like a daily newsletter and doing all this reporting, and then like anything extra on top of that is such a hassle, like finding advertisers or like, I mean, like just doing any of these extra things is like, you know, like there's a lot going on already. And, you know, I think I reached a point where it's like, okay, I'm happy just making this a thing that's, you know, I think you let a good thing go out when it's still good. And, you know, it might disappoint some people. I'm sure many other people would be stoked. Many other people would be stoked about that. But I've definitely gotten a few, there've been a few people who have made the case for me to keep writing the newsletter, to pass it off to somebody. And, you know, I understand, you know, the argument behind that, but I think for me, it makes sense to kind of, to close this thing down.
Would you ever pass it off to some sort of like more formal school stewardship where like, oh, this is now under the purview of like, of, I don't know, the whatever department, like subsection of the department owns it. And like, you know, every few years they, or every year it's like a different thing and a different student runs it. I don't know. Would that defeat the purpose if the school owned it?
Well, I think having the school own it would be kind of antithetical to the brand that we built. But no,
this puckish gadfly of a newsletter.
Right. Yeah. Owned by USC owning the IP to the moron of the year, trophy and everything. that would be funny. If there were an existing news outlet that was interested in acquiring, you know, the E-list or the brand or some other kind of, you know, some of the other IP, you know, I would be interested in talking, certainly. You know, I think the one world in which, the newsletter keeps going is maybe if there's some institution, you know, some news outlet out there that decides that they think this audience is valuable. Maybe the brand means something and they continue to write it. And I feel that this institution is one that can, you know, kind of, I mean, not to sound like an asshole, but to be kind of worthy of, you know, the brand, you know, like I'd feel good about that, but I'm at peace with the idea of shutting it down. I mean, it doesn't break my heart to do so. Yeah,
that's healthy. Okay. Well, so you'll have shut this down by the end of this coming summer. You will have graduated college. You will have shut this down. You will, you know, presumably still be working at the San Francisco Standard, where you've been working now for, I think, about a year and a half or 2 years. Judging by your general nature and everything I know about you, you probably won't just be working on your duties at the Standard. Like, you seem to be somebody who likes to be doing multiple things at once. Is there like a thing that comes after this? Like, after you're no longer a student, after you shut down Morning Trojan, is there like a new newsletter? Are you like, you know, suddenly doing like short form video work or like hosting a podcast for the Standard? What's like, you clearly have like a desire to be doing too much at once. Like, what's in the pipeline?
Well,
after this,
okay, like the most important thing to know about me is that I do not plan these things ahead. Historically, I come up with an idea and like in, you know, 24 hours I'm like, I have decided to do it. And I don't know, we'll have to see. I don't have anything in the works right now, but you know, I mean, I wouldn't be shocked if there's some other project to do. But I mean, there is, you know, I am in a place where I feel like, you know, I've had some fun during my time in school, kind of doing these projects. But I do want to become the best journalist I can possibly be, and I think like right now that means like focusing on the reporting and on the journalism. Yeah. And, you know, I am lucky to be in a place in the Standard that has the resources and, is, you know, wants to be this home for ambitious journalism. And I have a mandate, you know, on my team to tackle these big stories. And, you know, that's something that I have some decent clips, but I'm nowhere, you know, I'm nowhere near as seasoned as, you know, many people, even, you know, certainly on our staff, but you know, you know, elsewhere at other, you know, publications. And I think I want to kind of focus on that. And, you know, and then, maybe I do work that I'm happy with, and I decide there's some other project that I think might be fun, or, you know, I could totally see that happening, but I want to kind of dig in and work on the fundamentals and the journalism and the reporting of it all.
If you have a website, you know how hard it can be to keep ads relevant to every visitor. That's where Google AdSense comes in. It connects your site to one of the largest ad networks in the world, so advertisers actually compete to reach your audience. Even if your content serves a specific niche, AdSense ensures your visitors see ads that matter to them, wherever they are. Publishers like WikiHow trust AdSense because the ads are high quality, the setup is simple, and the revenue is consistent. Visit google.com/earn with AdSense to learn more. That's GOO.GLE/earn with AdSense. So you'd said earlier that Morning Trojan has no social presence. I found your TEDx presentation from like, it must have been four years ago or something. Oh, I think God. It was during your senior year of high school. But I bring this up to say, you're a natural presenter. I just search Tomo Chan on YouTube and it pops up. I bring this up to say, you're a good presenter. We're on the podcast now. You've got a great podcast voice. I wonder if like you have plans or interest in doing some kind of front of camera or on mic work that doesn't seem to have been anything you've really done so far. I couldn't find anything besides a couple podcast appearances in that presentation. But like, is that something you are pursuing?
So sometimes at the Standard, they make us go on TV to talk about our stories, and every time I have to go on TV, I'm like, fuck, like,
oh, woe is you.
I hate it. it's not my thing. And I think I do fine, and I think I've gotten better at it as it becomes less of a chore, less of a hassle, when you've done it more and it's like less nerve-wracking, whatever. But no, I've never thought of myself as a like on-air talent kind of thing. I don't think that's where I'm best. I'd like to, I'm better when I can
better in
craft
the
a little jab. I can spend an hour crafting a written joke or working on some kind of snarky, funny thing. And, I think that's what I have the most fun with. But you're absolutely right in that. Being able to present well and to speak and to be on camera if needed is something that's a skill. It's an asset and something definitely worth working on. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Something I ask almost every guest: how do you define the term creator?
I think I might be the right person to ask this. I mean, given that I don't consider myself a creator, but I mean, maybe that is a,
we'll get into it.
That makes it more interesting. Yeah. I think influencer. When I think creator, I think something distinct from journalist. I think there are some journalists who obviously kind of blur that line, particularly in the newsletter space. You're ones who are more native to social media. But I guess I think of somebody who's, that's difficult. that's a difficult.
No, that's interesting. I mean, it's interesting. You instantly reach for the word influencer and social media. And then you distinct from a journalist, which I'm always interested in asking journalists what they think, right? Like I asked, Sophia Smith-Gaylor this when I had her on a couple months ago, and she formerly, she went to journalism school, I believe, or broadcast media school. And then she worked at the BBC and then Vice. And then she, I think when she was at the BBC, she started making short form videos, TikToks, and finding success with that. She really figured out how to package, how to retell, longer form written journalism stories for the TikTok audience. And I asked her like how she defines creator journalist. And her definition was, she was like, I use the word creator journalist for myself to signal to people that I am a journalist who traffics in short form video. And like that is like a important medium for me.
Who traffics in short form video.
Well, she didn't say that. I don't know if she used the word traffics, but that's my word. But no, for me, it's like, I mean, a creator, there's a bunch of definitions, right? And like the real truth of like, well, what's the definition of the word creator is it's like, it depends on the platform interests the person you're aligned the person you're speaking to is aligned with, right? So like if you're, it comes from YouTube, right? Like YouTube started using the word in 2011 to refer to YouTube users. So like the way we use it now comes from that. But the way I use it in terms of like people I look forward to talk to this is like anybody producing digital media distributed on digital platforms is like the core of what they're doing, who's somehow growing an audience for it and somehow monetizing it, even in a very abstract sense where it's like you're not really monetizing Morning Trojan. You know, you have some sponsorships, but like for you, the monetization as such is more like building. It's more just something you're doing that, you know, has a knock-on effect for your career and for your work and for your future, right? So like that's like kind of a very indirect form of monetization. But to me, like you are a creator in as much as you are, like my other definition that's a little more like, okay, is like anybody contributing to the corpus of the internet, right? Which is what you're doing. You're like, you're producing stuff for the internet, right? Like what's content? I like to say that content is just like, you know, whatever you look at on your phone, no matter where it comes from, no matter who makes it, it's content by dint of being consumed on the phone, right?
Right. Right. No, sure. And look, like I also, you know, we recently developed a website that scrapes the daily crime logs that the school puts out. I mean, it's like really hard to read PDFs, and you know, you can find it like crime.morningchurgeon.com. Yeah. And it's this website that I developed. And the whole idea is just to make these crime stats more accessible. And like, yeah, that's not something that a you know reporter is necessarily gonna go do. And so yeah, I mean, I think that the creator label is right in that you know we're making stuff that we hope will resonate with people. But you know, I guess one way you could define a journalist, and this isn't necessarily, you know, I guess the two terms aren't mutually exclusive under this definition, but you know, a journalist is somebody who is looking to answer questions and to go, you know, find things that people don't want you to find out about, and to spread, you know, information to a large group of people. And, you know, yeah, I mean, there's certainly overlap with that. And I think that the journalists who, maybe the journalists who are also creators are the ones who, can be the most successful. I don't know. Like that's the question. Yeah.
Maybe. Yeah. Last note I want to end it on. What is one specific thing that you are really proud of having accomplished with Morning Trojan? And what's one thing you hope to still do with it before you, you know, hang up the hat next summer?
You know, I mean, I think the thing that you got to be most proud of is the audience that we've built. You know, not just the size, but the kind of loyalty of that audience. You know, I'm proud of that, and we've put in a lot of work over these last 3 years, and we are obviously continuing to do that. And it's you know, as you know, or any other creator or journalist knows, I mean, it's really rewarding to show that, to be able to see that your hard work pays off, and there are people who are actually, you know, reading the content that you're working really hard to put out. And so that's been the coolest thing. And you know, I mean, that's just such an obvious answer, but that's been nice to see. You know, in terms of what we plan to continue doing, and you know, I don't know, I think the goal is always to just put out better, more fun, more attention grabbing journalism. Like we want to do fun stories. And, you know, I think we have some stuff coming up that people are going to like. And so I'm excited to do that work as always. I think it's only going to get better, you know, between now and when I graduate.
Awesome. Well, Tomo, thank you for coming on. And I suppose if anybody listening is, you know, USC alum in the area of LA down there, they should subscribe. They only have what, like 9-8 months left to do so. So
a few months. Yeah. MorningChurgeon.com.
Go check it out, people. And we'll see you next week.
If you enjoyed that episode and are looking for something else about building a local media product, then I recommend this episode with Landon Huslig. He has a newsletter, podcast, and Instagram account covering life in Wichita, Kansas. It brings in $120,000 a year, and he tells us all about it in this episode here.